Unfortunately, there's a lot of rest for the wicked when it comes to the Atlanta Braves as their offseason begins, as the postseason is underway. And yes, I am staring at a screen right now watching Max Fried, 19-game winner, lead the Yankees against the Red Sox. But that's not what we're talking about right now as we head out to the WadeFord.com hotline on Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you until 10 o'clock. Grant McCauley, our Braves insider and host of From the Diamond, joins me now to put a bow on the Braves season. Grant, they finished 76-86, but that doesn't tell the whole story as this team was one of the hottest teams in baseball to end the season. What did you see from the turnaround over the latter last few weeks?
Well, I think a few things that you could point at, not the least of which was the return of Chris Sale, a return to form for Spencer Strider, the resurgence of Michael Harris, the consistently great play of Drake Baldwin, the rise of Hurston Waldrip, getting Ha-Seong Kim, I think, certainly helped. Ozzie Albies was swinging the bat well until he suffered a season-ending injury, which I'm sure we can get into. Matt Olson had a good second half as well and closed out his season on a hot streak. You start adding all of those things up. And, oh, by the way, that guy Ronald Acuna Jr. started playing like Ronald Acuna Jr. again later as well. So it just looked like the Braves team. And Chris Sale said this. This was the team. This is the way we expected to play all year. So do we know it's in there? Yes. Does it take away all the disappointment? Of course not, but I think that there is a case to be made for this. Even though the momentum of one season doesn't carry into another, they just needed to remind themselves in some ways who they are and what they're capable of. And I think that that is what I took away from the surge in September and the more encouraging signs and performances that we saw.
A couple of pressing issues for the Braves to take care of as the offseason begins. You mentioned Kim. What do you know about the latest with his contract? I believe he has a player option for $16 million. Is it a no-brainer that he picks it up, or is there a chance he's going to be looking for a long-term deal?
No, I mean, he's a Scott Boras client, so you can kind of choose your own adventure there. I mean, that's just not ever going to be a foregone conclusion. Really, the way that he ended up with his contract was because of his shoulder surgery that he underwent in August of 2024. He still was able to get a two-year deal worth at least $29 million, 13 this year, and the $16 million player option that you mentioned. So the ball is in his court. He has within 5 days after the World Series to make that decision and whether he wants to just go with that option or if he wants to opt out and become a free agent again. The Braves could also look at the possibility of trying to get an extension done, saying, okay, well, that $16 million, if you're interested in that, we're interested in having you longer. What does that look like? Is that 3 years and 60. I don't know that at his age you're necessarily looking at that 5, 6, or 7 year deal like a Dansby Swanson got when he was a free agent a couple of years younger than Ha-Seong Kim is. But those are kind of the particulars, I guess, in trying to add some context to it. He had a down year, certainly, but the way he finished the season, the way he was playing, and the fact that he showed clubs that he's healthy and able to play shortstop again, it wouldn't shock me if he did decide, hey, I do want to go out and be a free agent, particularly with the agent that he has. I mean, they're kind of an all-in philosophy as far as Boras is concerned. And, you know, say what you like about agents and Boras in particular, but his job is to make sure that players get paid what they're worth. The team's job is to try to pay them what you feel that they're worth. And I think the chasm and the subjectivity between those two sides is something we can argue about for a very long time.
With another season, unfortunately, afflicted by injuries and subpar performance based on, to his credit, the lofty standards he set for himself, Grant, do you believe there's a real chance Ozzie Albies has played his last game as a Brave?
I don't really think that that's the case here. The real thing that's hanging over this like a cloud is the fact that he suffered another broken bone. And this is the wrist, the foot, the toe. I mean, he's had to go through it here over, like, what, 3 of the last 5 years now that he's dealt with this kind of thing. This one, I don't think it necessarily is the death knell for the Braves picking up his $7 million club option because they have to pay him $4 million in a buyout. So this has been my question, really, and especially once he started swinging the bat well in the second half. Do you really want to let Ozzie Albies walk and go potentially get back to being himself over $3 million? I don't think that they do. I don't know how much that line of thought has changed just based on it's a hammock bone. It's not something that should cost him the entire winter, but I think we saw something, Chris, throughout the course of the season that may not have ever necessarily and may not ever be expressly put out there by Ozzie Albies, but I just kind of wonder how long it took him to really feel like himself after the broken wrist last year, because if you remember, he came back and hit right-handed exclusively for the final few games of the season, and then, of course, to be back in the postseason. So swinging the bat left-handed, you know, over the course of the winter, into the spring, and even into this year, who knows when and if he was back to 100%, but it certainly seemed like he was more of himself in the second half than he was in the first.
Talking all things Braves with our insider, Grant McCauley. Make sure you check out From the Diamond wherever you get your podcasts. The $64,000 question, obviously, does Brian Snicker return? No clear answers as of yet. Are you hearing anything one way or the other?
Well, this is obviously the week where that decision is going to be made. That's the indications that I've gotten. I'm sure those conversations have been happening pretty much beginning on Monday, the first day of the offseason for the Braves, and running through what I would guess would be the first few days of this week, because they ultimately kind of need to make a decision about this, at least that part of it, even if they're not going to hire a new manager tomorrow. It's just trying to figure this whole thing out. And back in the spring, it seemed to be a little bit more of a, all right, well, this could be the last year for Snit. And obviously the hopes were high for the Braves at that point. When everything started to kind of come crashing down around basically the entire club's ears by the middle of the season, between the lack of performance of the offense, then all of the injuries to the entire starting staff and some of the other things the Braves had to go through, I would have kind of thought that maybe that would be enough, that this would kind of be the indication that, all right, well, maybe this just wasn't meant to be, and kind of start to transition into that, you know, send-off mode, but it just never happened. And then the Braves started playing better. So that started me, I'm sure, among other people, wondering, maybe he does want to get one more of these things. I mean, this is not a long-term deal where Snit's looking to just keep managing well into his 70s, which that's where he is now, knocking on the door there. But one more year, his 50th year in the organization, and having that one final year as a manager, I think you heard a lot of Braves players say it after the season ended on Sunday that, look, I mean, they appreciate Brian Snitker, and they'd be happy to have him back next year. So that carries some value. Snit's opinion, obviously, is going to carry some value as far as his decision is concerned, but the club ultimately has to make this call because his contract is up. So they've got to sort this all out. We can talk about different candidates. We can talk about different, targets that the Braves could have as far as manager is concerned. But one thing that I do think is interesting, if Brian Snitker does come back, I just want to throw this hypothetical out there for you. Ron Washington is not managing the Los Angeles Angels anymore. He was relieved of his duties. They called it performance and not health-related. If Brian Snitker is back next year, what about having Ron Washington back on this staff to kind of get the Braves back to maybe the vibes that they were feeling a couple of years ago with Ron Washington and all of really the tenure that Wash had here? That could be of some value too. So maybe if you don't make a move in terms of your manager, make that change, you're able to bring back some of the continuity that was a big part of the club's success for a number of years with Brian Snitker involved and with Ron Washington involved.
Speaking of back or not, another decision that needs to be made. I don't know, somehow, some way, Grant, he finishes with 29 saves and a 3.21 ERA. That's Raisel Iglesias. He had an over 6.5 ERA for a good chunk of the season, and he was able to whittle it down and collect another respectable season. Even if it's not as the closer, do you think the team is considering bringing him back?
I do. I think that he will be back, and I think that he will be the Braves closer next year. If you were to ask me to pick one or the other, does it happen, does it not happen, that would be my read on it. And I think that he, through the first 2 months or so of the season, was dealing with not really having a lot of normal usage. He had some struggles with that slider. He had to make an adjustment. He ultimately did. I can understand at 30, into your 30s, well into your big league career, you're not just looking to scrap pitches just because, and ultimately that was a adjustment he had to make. And once he did, that last 45 or more appearances, he had a sub-2 ERA. He was almost perfect in saves. I think it was 18 out of 19 at one point, coming down the stretch. And, the strikeouts were there. The walks were gone. The homers were gone. He just looked like the automatic closer that the Braves had in 2024, one of the best closers in baseball. So, again, you're not looking at a guy who's going to be commanding some, huge multi-year deal that's going to carry him to age 40. I would think that Raisel Iglesias would be at or near the top of the list for the Braves. And one of the indicators you got that they, still valued him was they didn't just want to give him away at the trade deadline and pay him to go play somewhere else. So I think that kind of left the door open in a way as well, just from an optics standpoint. I think he's liked pitching here. I think he's had success here. And that's a guy I will be looking at to bring back. But I will stipulate, I think the Braves need to make another bullpen move or two beyond that. Raisel Iglesias can be one, but I think another couple of moves to at least shore things up. And I know Joe Jimenez is expected to be back next year. That could be big too, but kind of add to this group. Have that quantity and have that quality. I think that's something the Braves left spring training with last year lacking, and that did hurt them at times, especially in the first half.
Well, I was just about to ask you, how big of an issue was it essentially going the majority of the season, if not all of it, without a true setup man?
I don't know that that's necessarily the case, because I thought Pierce Johnson was really good in that role. I mean, missing Joe Jimenez, though, to your point, or if that's the question is, yeah, I think it definitely hurt. Is it the difference in being 86 and 76 and 76 and 86? No, it's not. But I think that, you know, ultimately you just wanted to have more quality arms and options out there. Not having A.J. Minter, and I know he got hurt with the Mets, so maybe that would have happened here. You take him off the board anyway, but I think that definitely hurt them. And losing Joe certainly destabilized that bullpen, because you wanted to have Pierce Johnson and Dylan Lee, who's a pretty good option, though he was a bit homer prone this year, needs to kind of work on that. But there were some pieces there that were still useful. They just did not have the same levels of the bullpen that they'd had in years past. And then by the time you got to the middle of the year and you got no Sale and no Schwellenbach and no Rinaldo, and A.J. Smith-Shawver's out, and then Grant Holmes goes down, that bullpen, that stress was just going to break it, and it definitely did.
Before I let you go, what and how much work does AA need to do on the starting staff? How many of the guys that are available to him that are not out for next season with an injury do you feel like are staples in the rotation, and how many spots are up for grabs?
So that's an interesting question. So I would put it this way. You look at Chris Sale, you look at Spencer Strider, you look at Spencer Schwellenbach as guys that I think you plan around. Hurston Waldrop, to me, has pitched his way into that discussion as well as the Braves' fifth starter. That, by some very simple math, has you with four starters right there. Then the questions become, Rinaldo Lopez, is he back and ready to be a full-time starter with that load again? That gets you to five. Then you've got Grant Holmes. Same question for him. Is he back and ready to take that on? That's the question they're going to have to get answered for both of those guys. They're already in Florida. They're throwing. They're hoping to face live hitters and then go home and have a normal offseason. Same thing for Spencer Schwellenbach, though he hasn't made it down to Florida yet. He's hoping to face live hitters and have a normal offseason. I did talk to him. It's been about a month now, but everything had healed up. He's pain-free. It's just a fluky, weird injury. So it's hard to project on the three of these guys. Schwellenbach, I think, is probably the weirdest, the freakiest of the bunch in terms of you just don't really feel good about it until he goes out there and time does its thing and you get further away from it and it doesn't seem to show any ill effects. But I think they still need another starter. I'll put it that way. I think that they need somebody who's a veteran, somebody who's proven that they can throw 175, 185 innings and do so in a high-quality rate. That doesn't mean you got to go out and, you know, break the bank on the biggest free agent starting pitchers. I don't anticipate the Braves doing that. I don't think anybody listening to us right now expects the Braves to break the bank in the free agent department. But can they find the right veterans, make the right moves, perhaps, you know, identify the right trade target? I absolutely think they can do that. I think they will do that. The Chris Sale trade showed us that. And by the way, that's another one to think about. Maybe extending Chris Sale is something the Braves could get into this offseason, not just Ha-Seong Kim. But maybe Chris Sale is due for one of those, because I think he wants to stick around in a Braves uniform for a while.
Real quick, just thinking about it now off the top of my head, if everything goes to plan with Kim, it looks like they should have the same position group back and ready to go next year, right?
Yeah, I mean, you got healthy Ronald. You got what you needed to see out of Michael Harris. Could he be more consistent? Yes. Jerickson Profar looked good. Austin Riley, I talked to a couple of weeks ago, actually right before the season ended, he's already feeling like he could be playing baseball in about 3 or 4 weeks. So that's a good thing. Matt Olson, Drake Baldwin, Sean Murphy should be back in spring training. Your big questions are, can you get Kim back, and is Ozzie Albies healthy and ready to go? That's a very good position group. I know people don't want to hear, oh, well, they're just not changing much, and they're just bringing people back, and they're running it back and all that. I don't necessarily think that applies as much to the offensive side as much as on the pitching side. They just need to make the moves to fortify what should be a talented group, but you got to stay healthy. And that's the other thing. There's just no way to accurately predict when and to who and to what extent those things are going to happen, but you plan for those rainy days. And I think that's what Alex Anthopoulos needs to do over the course of the offseason.
Grant, appreciate it as always. Enjoy a well-deserved offseason, and we'll obviously be checking in anytime the Braves make a move in the offseason. We'll talk soon.
All right, thanks. Look forward to it.
All right, that is Grant McCauley there, our Braves insider. Make sure you check out From the Diamond. When we get back, let's have a little fun, shall we? It's the off week for the Falcons. Atlanta, how's your fantasy team doing? I'm 3-1. I'm hanging in. Had a rough week last week. Took my first loss. Let's get any questions in that you have about fantasy right now at C Thomas Radio. Hit me up with your fantasy questions. Chad Parsons, Under the Helmet Fantasy Guru, is going to join me next. We'll take your questions as well. Hit me up at C Thomas Radio with what you want to know about fantasy football. We're talking fantasy ball next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. How's your fantasy team doing? You struggling? Oren, how's your fantasy team doing?
I'm in a PPR league, sir. And my team, at the moment, has not broken 100 points.
Oh, my goodness.
In any game this season. My first four picks, I kid you not, I had number one pick in the draft. I went Ja'Marr Chase, then A.J. Brown, then Kyren Williams, then Travion Henderson, and Joe Burrow. My first four picks.
Oh, no.
My first four picks that I thought would be in the top 20 of each position are outside of the top 20 at each position, and Joe Burrow as my starter. I don't have the Ja'Marr Burrow stack at all right now. So it's having to depend on now Sam Darnold and and Jackson Dart to kind of carry me through, which they're not doing,
no,
as you can see.
Well, no, but maybe Sam Darnold has some hope. We're talking a little football tonight.
The most consistent player on my team this year has been Tucker Kraft.
Wow.
My tight end.
And the Packers scored 10 points a couple of weeks ago.
Did not do well, no.
Not exactly what you're looking for. But if you're struggling like Oren is, I'm not. I'm 3-1 in my league, although I did take my first L this week with the Falcons on a bye on Chris Thomas tonight. We figured let's talk a little fantasy. Under the Helmet Dynasty founder Chad Parsons joins me now on the WadeFord.com hotline. Chad, let's start here. Who are a couple of players that have either surprised you in a good way, meaning they've outperformed your expectations early, or in a bad way, meaning you thought these guys were going to be studs and they just haven't lived up to it going into week five?
Yeah, I think one for everybody is Ashton Jeanty. You know, going in the first round, the first 3 weeks, he was super disappointing. And when people start to think about benching someone like that, that's the week they go off. And it's amazing. He got a couple blocks and all of a sudden he has a house call, he's breaking tackles. I think he set a record for 11 forced missed tackles in week four. And that's all it takes. He has a 30-plus point game in most of the scoring systems. And now it's like maybe you benched him in week three, benched him in week four, you missed out on that big game. So he's a huge disappointment when you look at that. O'Marrion Hampton had a couple down games. A lot of times these rookies take some time, and by midseason they're really helping you.
When it comes to the quarterback market, like my producer Oren was just saying, he unfortunately took Joe Burrow thinking he'd have another MVP-like performance. Who are some quarterbacks that are maybe lower on the totem pole that you could take a look at as a backup option?
Yeah, I think Jackson Dart with his first start, you have to feel optimistic. They got the win. Hopefully he doesn't get injured. He's running around lowering his shoulder into guys like his running back Cam Scatabo there. But the rushing in fantasy pays the bills, and he didn't have to do a whole lot passing-wise. So I think almost with his situation, losing Malik Nabers really stinks. But for a rushing quarterback that might be 30, 40, 50 yards a game, he's a threat in the red zone. You saw that in his debut. I don't know if losing his first wide receiver is going to be as big of a deal fantasy-wise as it might be to other quarterbacks.
What did you make of Patrick Mahomes going into the season, and how do you feel his numbers suggest the type of season he's going to have now?
Yeah, I mean, you saw everything come together. Before the season, I've always been Mahomes positive, and Mahomes is going to bounce back in any given moment, anytime you doubt him, fantasy-wise especially. You know, a couple years in a row, things don't look good, he's not running that much. First few weeks, he's running like he could maybe go for 900,000 yards. So the weapons are coming together. We just keep ticking down the clock for Rashee Rice coming back. And now you look at all these ancillary guys. I was skeptical that Xavier Worthy was going to come back and play as well as he did. So he's still a high injury risk, but he just needs to make it through a couple more games. And all of a sudden, guys like Tyquan Thornton, Juju Smith-Schuster, they're very ancillary options. With Rashee Rice, I think people forget how good he is and what's going to happen. He's almost their version of Puka Nacua in a poor man sort of way when he returns to that lineup after two more games.
What did you project Saquon Barkley to do after the historic season so far, and then what do you make of what he's done in this season?
The Eagles are perplexing. I mean, A.J. Brown has to be the biggest disappointment, but Saquon Barkley, considering the expectations, not hitting 20 points in a game, and yet – you look up, they're 4-0. They've been very tight to the vest on how they're playing offense. And it really hasn't been he's avoiding the goal line. You know, I think one of the biggest things would be like, you know, he keeps getting siphoned away with all those goal line opportunities. And that really hasn't been the case. So I think with Barkley, it really is the offense is so tight here. So they're 23rd in running back targets. They're middle of the road in goal line carries for the running back position. So I think for the goal line, you would take that. I think it's a few more targets here and there. And here's the thing. They're playing like the Chiefs were last year. Let's just get wins. Who cares? You know, they're not playing for fantasy. And I think that's very concerning overall when you look at the Eagles' offense. I'm pretty worried about the ceiling for anybody outside of Jalen Hurts on that offense.
You know, it's pretty funny. We watched on Monday Night Football just an awful game between the Jets and the Dolphins. But, Chad, I have Devon Achane on my team, and despite their lack of success, he's been phenomenal.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. And the great thing is about Achane and McCaffrey, guys like that, they can almost do nothing on the ground, and it's a bonus because number three in running back targets is the Miami Dolphins, and Tua is just not going to push the ball down the field. No Tyreek Hill. It's going to go towards Darren Waller. He's a great pickup this week if still out there. And Achane getting 4, 5, 6 targets a game is huge for that offense. Doesn't matter if they're winning, losing. He's very well insulated as long as he gets those targets.
Talking all things fantasy with our buddy Chad Parsons. Make sure you check out Under the Helmet is where you find all of his good work on fantasy football. You mentioned tight ends. Darren Waller had a resurgent game last night. I know he was not ranked very highly coming into the season, but here in Atlanta, Kyle Pitts looks like he's starting to come on a little bit. Is he worth taking a flyer on if he's still out there in your league?
Absolutely. Like, I was looking into the Falcons offense. Never know if you're going to throw in one of those questions for the hometown team there, but they really have the perfect thing going on. I call it a fantasy funnel, which is they have 2 to 3 guys, studs, with Drake London, Bijan Robinson, as well as Kyle Pitts, and the ball doesn't really go anywhere else. And that's great for fantasy. Think back to Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill a few years ago. Think back to A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith and Dallas Goedert. Like, there's many iterations of this, T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase. So that's really good for fantasy. And the only thing you need in that equation is to have a good enough, doesn't have to be an elite quarterback, but a good enough quarterback to fuel. So the fact that Darnell Mooney hasn't been much of a factor, he was more last year. Raven McLeod, not much of a factor. You know, the true tight end, because Pitts is sort of a hybrid player, not much of a factor. So that bodes well. And I'll say this, if one of them happens to go down, even more upside. So all three are lineup viable right now, but just imagine, and they only have one touchdown each. So there's actually more upside in the passing game for any one of them if the other goes out.
Such a shame, this guy's injury-riddled career, but this year he looks healthy and he's back to being one of the best backs in the league. Did you foresee this start for Jonathan Taylor?
Yeah, I mean, he finished as running back one in fantasy. Now, it wasn't the greatest year for running back one overall a few years ago, but he's in his prime. 23 to 27 or 28 is the prime window for running back. And the biggest key is no Anthony Richardson, and the offense is actually playing well. So you have Jonathan Taylor on a full functioning offense. That's one of the biggest keys. And the other part is they're not even really optimizing him. You know, they are getting plenty of goal line looks, but 26 in running back targets so far this season. So I would say wait till maybe we get some negative game scripts, some games where they trail, and Jonathan Taylor could be even bigger because, frankly, you get more points if they're trailing and you get more targets in the passing game than you do with getting 5 or 10 additional carries unless you find a touchdown or a long score. So, yeah, Jonathan Taylor was one of the biggest bounce-back candidates, and you see what he can do when healthy.
Pair of guys in Jacksonville vastly underperforming in Brian Thomas and the number three overall pick in the draft. We know, listen, we're only getting 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 defensive snaps a game, but that doesn't matter for Travis Hunter. He's still not putting up the results on offense. What do you make of the Jacksonville Jaguars struggles?
Yeah, I think if you're in a league and you're doing well right now, let's say you're 3-1, 4-0, I think you have the latitude to go after Brian Thomas. I think he's the biggest bounce-back candidate. He had an outstanding year last year. I will say my concern lies with the quarterback. I think Trevor Lawrence is really overcooked right now. He's having trouble. He's got so many turnover-worthy plays, and he's just not elevating the situation. I mean, I think there's a reason Mac Jones fueled more production out of this passing game last year than Trevor Lawrence is this year. So there's a lot of pressure on Trevor Lawrence. to be fair, he got the big contract, and I didn't think he really deserved it. And fantasy-wise, he's been a shoulder shrug guy his entire career. So Brian Thomas, he's working through a wrist injury. I think that's part of it. Part of it is just the chemistry, but the targets are still going to be there. The biggest thing with Travis Hunter, he's moonlighting at the position, and they basically said, Dyami Brown is out. Let's keep you at the wide receiver three. Let's boost up Parker Washington. They have no faith in him being more than a slot guy, more than a tertiary option in that wide receiver core. And that's the biggest thing. He's just not seeing enough routes. And deeper targets is one of the main things as well.
Are you buying into Sam Darnold giving JSN enough love to make him a top, I don't know, 5-6 wide receiver?
Oh, yeah. I talked about the funnel in Atlanta. The funnel is even tighter. That hole is so small in Seattle right now because Cooper Kupp, he's fallen off a little bit. But Jackson Smith-Njigba is doing elite things. You know, a lot of times you got to go beyond the box score of, you know, how many catches, what are they doing on a per-route basis, some of these ancillary things to basically justify how well they're playing. And he's over 4 yards per route run. And I'll just say, like, Tyreek Hill in his best season was in his threes. Puka Nacua, you know, our guys in the 2.5, 3.0 range. And Jackson Smith-Njigba is over 4.0. So this is absolutely justified. He's getting massive volume. And what I would say is he can still do a little better. So he can recede a little back in terms of efficiency, only running about 25 routes per game. So Seattle, if they open up their offense a little bit, normally you see a guy like that with 30, 35 routes per game. So he's got some latitude to even push beyond the 18 points per game. He could even be 20 or 21 if things turn his way with an extra touchdown or two or just a few more routes.
Before I let you go, I took a chance on Justin Herbert as my QB1. I really thought that offense would find a way to explode for him this season, another year of McConkey, and you got the running game that's been retooled there. We know Harbaugh loves to run the ball to set up a deep shot. But Herbert's been okay. How do you project he and the Chargers offense going forward?
Yeah, I love it. The one drawback might be that their defense is too good. But let's worry about that another day. I will say Joe Alt, they're down another tackle. So they had one of their studs already out, and now Joe Alt this past week. That's the biggest concern. Is that going to lead to Herbert running for his life? But I think these weapons, they have loaded up in a hurry with Quentin Johnston taking a step up, bringing back Keenan Allen, adding Ladd McConkey's been the lost guy. He really hasn't produced all that much. Arondé Gadsden, he's a wild card at tight end as well. So they have so much depth at the position in terms of weapons that I think Herbert's going to have a tough time not producing. So the big concern in the next 2-3 weeks is going to be how long Joe Alt is back at tackle. But other than that, I think you see the fact that he's aggressive now running the ball, Herbert is, and the fact that the weapons, they can even stand to lose a guy and you're still plugging in someone like Trey Harris, a second round pick that they like, or Keandre Lambert-Smith, who was huge in the training camp and preseason process. So they go so deep, and I think Justin Herbert has a lot of ways to help you throughout the rest of the season.
Chad, great stuff. We'll be checking out Under the Helmet and the podcast, and we'll talk soon.
Absolutely. Go Birds.
All right. That is, I don't know if you want to say that around these parts, but that is Chad Parsons. Make sure you check out Under the Helmet podcast. Sports Talk on the Game is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Coming off that huge win on Sunday, Oren has 5 true and false Falcons questions for me. We'll do that next when we get back. 92.9 The Game. Thanks to Chad Parsons for stopping by. Check out Under the Helmet Fantasy. Really good stuff there. Oren, got a question for you before we get to 5 true and false. It is Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you until 10 o'clock. Are you a give up on the league if you stink guy?
No, I'm not that guy. I don't want to be that dude. I paid my money. So at this point, I'm just play it out. Not going to be great probably if that happens, but yeah, I'm just going to play it out.
Those guys and gals are the worst types of guys and gals.
The ones who just quit
after
a while.
If you're the give up on the league person, that's just a bad job out of you because you ruin everything for everyone. Because depending
on a bye week,
yeah,
or weird,
and
just
it
weird
depends
how it
when that happens, and it depends on who's in first at the time. Like, you really screw everything up for everybody if you stop competing on a week in, week out basis. Carl Dukes.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
I believe you are calling attention to somebody right now.
Yes. It's been said on these – I'm not breaking news. This has been said on Dukes and Bell numerous times. Carl and Mike were in a league together, and
Carl was like, I'm done.
Carl didn't do so hot, and then he just stopped caring. Like so many of us do when our fantasy
just wanted to enjoy his Sundays in a different way.
Yeah, but you know what? You live and you learn. Hey. I don't think he was invited back the next year.
Probably not.
If you're that guy.
Probably
yeah, I'm not either.
Not.
I don't give up on the league even if I stink. I only do one league a year, so I take it personally and I invest my time and my have you ever been a guy who's done like 4, 5, 6 leagues?
I have been a guy who has done 8 one time and
8?
I did 8 and I told myself never again.
Like I feel like that would stop being fun at week 2.
It just I don't know what persuaded me to just like I'm going to jump in all these leagues. Yeah. And just keeping up with drafts was bad enough as it is and then I tried to be the guy like, all right, I'm going to get similar players in all of my leagues. So therefore, I just track everybody kind of the same way. Yeah, that worked for like 3 leagues and the other leagues it didn't happen. And I don't think I won money in any of them.
That's usually what happens. Our friend Bo Johnson does a lot of leagues, right?
Bo is – I played that song coming into this last segment by Traffic Dear Mr. Fantasy. Bo is our Mr. Fantasy. Like that's the guy who like he is – as into it. I think he's in more than 5 this year.
See, that's like, explain to me if you're somebody that does that, how that's fun. That's just stress and like just cause for mismanagement and just takes up, you know what the bottom line is, Orin? Especially because Bo is such an involved dad with his daughter's softball and all the sports and everything else. Where does he find the time? Where do you find the time, Bo? If you're listening, let me know. I want to know, where do you find the time?
I'm a person who, you know, through learning how to become a better partner in my relationship, I can't be on my phone all the time. I have to be present.
Or just distracted in general.
Just distracted. And being on 7 or 8 different fantasy football teams, I tell you what, those times I was on those teams, it was a lot of time spent looking at my phone screen. So it substantially cuts down the amount of time. And Sundays, too. I don't want to have as much invested in football games I am not that concerned about that have no bearing on my personal fandom as it is. I want to be concerned about the Falcons game. I don't want to be concerned about 18 other things or just – and I realize my fantasy team, like my players are from all different teams, but I don't want to be as just invested in all of that as somebody who has that many teams. I got two, and that's good enough for me.
If you're doing 5 leagues, that means you probably have a player in every game.
Yeah.
I would just about, right? Or
you may have close to a player from every team.
Yeah, something like that as well.
Because that's what, 12 guys, and there's 32 teams in the league, so.
Is the math mathing?
It possibly could be.
It might be. All right, with that said, good stuff, let's get to true and false.
Don't look now, sir, but Bijan is top 20 in the NFL in rushing and receiving yards.
Yeah, I read something like Bijan has more. It was like a thing. It was like Bijan has more receiving yards than, and it was like 8 future Hall of Famers.
Yeah, guys who are currently on my fantasy team, 2 of them right now, as a matter of fact. 1 A.J. Brown.
Oh, boy.
And 1 Ja'Marr Chase. Oh, he has more receiving yards than all of them. Yeah, which is not fun whatsoever. But brings me to question number 1. Bijan gets the double 1,000 this year. Rushing and receiving yards.
Okay, how much do you have his stats in front of you right
now? I do, and I'll even tell you what he's projected as right now. Okay. So as it stands right now, he's got 314 on the ground and 270 receiving. If the season was to go this way right now, he would finish with 1335 on the ground and 1148 receiving. He would have 342 touches.
Oh, that's a lot. But yeah, because you know why, Orin? They need him. That's really what it comes down to. I'm going to say true. I'm going to say he gets 1,000 season, and he has one of the best offensive Falcon seasons in history. Again, just if for nothing else, if this offense is going to live up to its potential, he's going to be a huge part of it. I know they probably
don't going to get touches.
I know they probably don't want him to get that many touches, but so be it.
342.
If Penix isn't amazing, that's only going to give him more. Like, and again, we saw it against the Vikings out of the backfield, took it 50 yards to the house on a reception. So, yeah, I'm going to say he does it.
All right. Now, I want you to kind of throw out game scripts with this and just kind of look on it as the Falcons and what they want to be offensively. They want to be a balanced offensive football team. You got two running backs. We just mentioned Bijan and the season he's getting ready to have. Tyler Algier had another double-digit carry game on Sunday. So out of the four games the Falcons have had, I think he's got three double-digit carry games.
And the other game he had, one.
One carry.
And that was the game he got blown out in. Coincidence? I think not.
There you go. Tyler has double-digit carries in each game that he's healthy the rest of the season, true or false?
True. Because, again, if you want to take some of the strain off of Bijan, and, again, Joe Patrick mentioned this. We'll play that conversation back for you coming up in the 9 o'clock hour if you missed it. Bijan Robinson is like your starter, and to me, Algier is your closer. And that's the way if you use them successfully, you're going to get the most out of them. So especially if the Falcons can get a couple of leads late in games, you do Bijan to open up the game, and then you do Algier, say that five times fast, to close out the game. So I think if the Falcons are winning a game, you can expect to see that formula repeated. And, yes, he gets double-digit carries.
All right. At the beginning of this season, it was announced that, Caleb McGarry was going to have surgery, was going to be out the entire season. Also snuck in there was Storm Norton missing 6 to 8 weeks, also having surgery, being placed on IR, eligible to return. We're going to hit this bye week. It'll be week 5, and then coming into next week afterwards will be week 6. So we'll be on the 6 weeks of the 6 to 8 week timetable for Storm Norton. True or false, he reclaims that right tackle spot after the bye.
False, unless Wilkinson implodes in the next couple of games. He's been good. He had a rough start with a couple of penalties. But why change a good thing if the offense is working when it's not like Storm Norton was the starter. He was the backup. So if it was McGarry coming back, of course he gets his job back. But, I'm going to say if Wilkinson has a good showing against Buffalo and San Francisco, and then let's say Norton's eligible to return after that, no, he goes back to his regular role as the swing tackle. He'll see action, but he won't be a starter. Wilkinson's earned that right. No Wally Pipp.
No Wally Pipp there. That's fair. Question number 4. So the Falcons right now heading into this bye are 2-2. After the bye, the next 5 games are as follows. You got home versus Buffalo. You go to San Fran for a Sunday night tilt. Back home against Miami. You go to New England. And then you got Indy. An Indy game, I believe, is the one that is overseas.
It is. And it's a 9:30 kickoff.
All right. So those 5 games, Buffalo at San Fran, Miami at New England, and then Indy. True or false, the Falcons go 4-1 in those games to get that record to 6-3.
No. As positive as I am about
it. I'm just saying. It seems like that's a very winnable stretch of games.
No, it's not. It's the next stretch of games that are winnable where you get New Orleans, and you get the Jets.
New Orleans and Carolina and the Jets, yeah. And
Seattle's winnable.
I think after this stretch, you get, in consecutive weeks, you get New Orleans, Carolina, and then the Jets, those next 3 weeks after.
Yeah,
but
and that should be
this 5 right here seems like it's perfectly just.
All right, if we're being brutally honest, which we always are in this program, Buffalo's a loss, so you're 2-3. Let's say San Francisco's a win, okay? So now you're 3-3. Who's next?
The Dolphins.
The Dolphins.
They're a mess.
That should be a win. So you're 4-3.
New England still does not know what they are yet.
That game's a toss-up. They scored 40 points last week.
Yeah, they did.
Drake May looks good, and Mike Vrabel knows how to coach. And then you get Indy.
It's Daniel Jones, man. Eventually, at some point, it has to stop being good for him, right? Danny Dimes is not going to be Danny Dimes all season.
I think the best they do in that stretch is 3-2.
Really?
Which I think would be a humongous success. I would take that. I would sign. You wouldn't sign up for 3-2 in that stretch right now. I would.
I mean, I'd take over 500, but 4-1 seems realistic to me. A very realistic possibility. Yeah. Wow.
And you've been more down on the Falcons than I have this year, especially with your picks.
I have been, but you know, I'm not trying to buy into the Kool-Aid, but that's just a stretch of the season where I'll get the Mr. Freaky there. No. San Fran, Purdy's kind of – he's not completely healthy right now.
If that game was at home, I'd be 80% more in with you.
That defense for San Fran still is not amazing.
No, it's not. For me, it's more about that game being on the road.
Kittle still won't be back. They got all their receivers right now are banged up. Ricky Parasol has like a knee thing, stability wrong with the like MCL or something. Juwan Jennings is banged up. They have so many key injuries right now that the fact that they got 2-3-0 was a surprise in itself. But I mean, just Jacksonville just beat them this weekend. Jacksonville of all teams. So I mean, I know the NFL is a week to week league, but I
more think so that, this year than I think any year I've ever seen in terms of just inexplicable wins and losses by teams based on their performance the week before.
They're not running the football well with McCaffrey right now. He's been a beast out of the backfield. I mean, you get him in fantasy, catching the football this year, but he's not been great running the football this year.
Yeah, I have McCaffrey and HN. They've been saving my behind week in and week out. I'm more of a 3-2 mode right now. But I get it. I get the optimism there. Hell, I'm here to support it. I just, you know, if I was betting dollars to donuts, I'd say 3-2 is more likely than 4-1. All right, we got one more. Let's hit it.
All righty, sir. This is just sort of a fun one here. The narrative about the pistol will finally go away. True or false?
True. Unless you lay a complete egg versus Buffalo and San Fran. I think we're over it now. We've seen it work. Other teams do it. It's a really convenient narrative, to quote Arthur Smith, to go back to when it's not working. I think for now, as long as the offense, thank you,
narrative.
As long as the offense continues to function, I think the narrative about the pistol will go by the wayside. But let's see. We're going to hear from Raheem Morris, Bijan Robinson, Drake London, Michael Penix when we get back, the sounds from the game and the sounds from early on in the week. We'll see if they talk about the pistol formation, all that and more coming up to start off the 8 o'clock hour on 92.9 The Game.